The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Monday, the 5th of February, 2024, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. A good morning and welcome to February, the month of love. We're going to have a good time. It is so cold that you got to find somebody to cuddle with. Good morning, Mr. Nuri.
You want to cuddle with me?
No, sir. I was just about to remind you that you work in a hotel where you have free AC.
Yeah, they have a heater too.
And you have a heater. Most people don't have the luxury of spending a large portion of their day in such well-conditioned environments. There are those of us that live in houses that were not designed for the winter chill. They were not designed to insulate. They were designed to let air flow through. And I, for one, living very close to the shore, I'm frigid every night due to the sweet,
are
cool
you
breeze.
Asking me to be your cuddle bunny?
No, sir, at all.
Perhaps you need a particular type of cuddle bunny.
See, I would have asked
that you're not getting.
I would have asked you to volunteer on the cuddle bunny list, right? Where social advocates understanding that loneliness contributes to poor quality of life, increased stress, and can have some health implications. That those people need somebody to cuddle with.
But it's not why we have social media.
No, you can't cuddle
in the loneliness.
You can't cuddle a phone. Hmm. You can't cuddle a TV. And so while I would have asked you to volunteer for that list, I realize that you've already been conscripted into another service, and I can't put you on the list. But I'm glad you raised that point. I think it's important for adults and parents to understand that their children can't cuddle the phone. The children can't cuddle the laptop, the tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And even though children can vicariously experience these emotions through media content,
mm-hmm.
these children need y'all, parents, guardians, grandparents, extended family, to fill in that gap.
Mm-hmm.
They need real hugs. They need real love. They need real cuddles. And we're talking about age-appropriate physical engagement between children and loved ones. See, we have a phenomenon in this town. And let me say to the audience, today we're going to talk about crime. Today I'm going to ask you, the audience, if you have a strategy, if you have been thinking about ways to respond effectively to the various types of crime that we're experiencing and the escalation in certain sectors, right? Certain spaces in terms of crime, like the escalation in traffic fatalities and bad driving, the escalation in sexual violence, particularly towards women and girls,
mm-hmm.
and the escalation in homicides, right? So when we talk about strategies, when we talk about responses, both legislative and policy and social responses,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a great point to start. Are we producing lawless or criminal-minded young people in our homes because we treat our children as objects and don't truly acknowledge our role as adults and parents in the psychological development of young people. In particular, at what age does a young man start smelling and looking like his daddy? See, that's an important point, because a lot of y'all women, when your sons begin to transition into puberty, when they begin to start smelling like man, smelling like they daddy, mm-hmm. and looking like your daddy, some of y'all shut off.
Go ahead.
Some of y'all shut off the switch, mm-hmm. the emotional switch. You can't find a way to engage with your kids, your sons, in the same way. Mm. I've heard it being yelled out of homes as we hung out in backyards. I've seen women throw it out there constantly on the internet. You're smelling, you look like you're no good daddy. Come from around me. But that's a indicator of a time period where the emotional engagement from parent to child changes. But it's important to remember. In fact, the science says that humans need, I think, at least 17 to 20, when you hug someone, a hug is more effective if it lasts, say, from 15 seconds to 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. Science says that humans need healthy touch. And people who get multiple hugs or opportunities for healthy physical engagement have less stress and tend to lead healthier lives. Text, I didn't say age-appropriate love. I said age-appropriate physical engagement, right? At younger ages, parents pick up the kids, they cuddle them, they put them in their lap, they roll over in the bed with them. But you're not necessarily going to do that with your 13-year-old son.
No.
With your 11-year-old son. But you can, when you see him, give him a hug. You can put your arm around him and give him a squeeze and let him know this is what age-appropriate, healthy touch feels like.
I appreciate the conversation, Aaron, and perhaps that too is what we need to deal with what is happening now. Mm-hmm. Today, there are people in social media who are saying that we have a crime crisis. I want to know if we have a crime crisis, Aaron, especially after the conversation we had on Friday. I want to know if there is a plan. Does our government have a plan? Does the church have a plan? Does the opposition have a plan? Does society have a plan? Are we in crisis? And if we are in crisis, should we be in crisis mode? Or should things continue to operate how it is operating?
And Carla, coming to you right now, I think the question in terms of are we experiencing a crime crisis sits, is the crisis the escalation in crime, or is the crisis the inability to respond effectively and appropriately to crime? Good morning, Carla.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning to Mr. Murray.
Good morning, good morning.
Yeah, you referenced kids needing this hug, love, and affection from parents.
Yes.
I think that is so paramount, because even when you look in the Bible of Genesis, every evening Jesus used to come and spend time with Adam. And so we show that Jesus had a relationship with Adam where he need that other touch, and he need the human side of him needed that element where he felt protected, loved, and appreciated and valued. Mm-hmm. When we look at Jesus after he would have fasted 40 days and 40 nights, you know that the Holy Spirit was already with him, because after he was baptized by John the Baptist, the Holy Spirit came upon him. But then an angel came and ministered to him. And so there again, we see this connection with even the Son of Man, the Son of God, having somebody coming and ministering to him and speaking to him in a way where giving him this love and compassion and making him feel as if it's okay. And so this is, as human beings, I think this is what's lacking in our society. But while we're looking at the crime and the children and what is lacking, we also have to look at policies and those who are making them. And we have to be quite honest and say, what is it that our policymakers have been doing? How passionate are they about the country? Because I believe the wealth of this nation is when we could take care of our parents, the elderly, and the children, protect them at all costs, and also ensure that the young boys are being grown into men. What is the rite of passage into men, and also protect the women?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, caller. Let's go to the next caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. How you do?
Fine, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Neary.
It's always a pleasure to hear your voice.
Listen, Aaron, I have something that I wanted to vent on that is making me feel some type of way this morning. You know, the young lady that jumped the bridge yesterday.
Yes.
You know, sometimes God put people in our way who we should minister to, like the gentleman was saying just now.
Mm-hmm.
And we pass those opportunities and brush it off as, okay, this is just another person. Three separate occasions yesterday, from early yesterday morning, I saw that lady walking in a zombie mode. And I just stared at her and wondered what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Later on that day, I saw her sitting on top of the hill there by Mortimer Candy Kitchen. I wondered the same thing. And yesterday evening, just before she jumped the bridge, I watched her walk up that bridge. And I said nothing. And it made me feel some type of way, because I'm now saying to myself, had I come out of my vehicle and just, excuse me, ma'am, I might have been able to save her for another day.
Thank you.
So people do need that intimate talk or touch or whatever from another person. I still do it with my 14-year-old son. Actually, I don't got to go to him. He comes to me and he just lay next to me and I just hug him and he give me a kiss on my forehead. And he lay there and gossip. But
right. That's
what you do to keep that those children close and, you know, within the human touch type of way.
Right. You let him initiate the contact. You let him say, hey, mom, right,
yeah,
to show you he's ready for some physical engagement. Just closeness with my mom.
Because I built that from a child. He comes to me. My 23-year-old still does the same thing. He comes to me and he would lay on the side of me. And he'd stretch my arm out and then wrap my arm around his neck and he'd lay there and chat.
Mm-hmm.
Because I built that. You have to build that with them. You can't take a 13-year-old and just go hug him and you never did it before, because he can take you up to something.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, caller. Absolutely. Coming to the phone line right now, text says, so why do you guys have an issue with grown men touching 13 and 14-year-olds if you are encouraging this? He's talking to me. I don't have a problem with parents, family members, people within their social network touching them. We do know that we have a problem with predators. And so we have to teach young people the difference between good touch and bad touch. But if young people don't get any good touch, they won't know what bad touch is. And B, they'll be so desperate for any touch, any form of physical engagement, that they start engaging in risky behavior. Good morning, caller.
I knew it. I don't know why, but I text. I grew up in a society where I used to watch American Channel by antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And Haiti got that affection, too. You can say what you want. American demonstrate affection. They hug when they greet you and they kiss you. I have American cousins. When they come, you hug me and kiss me. And any true bohemian would know that is the fact. Back then, it died on now. And now it, I don't think it's like that in some state. But back then, they're known for that. And I understand Haiti, too. Now, being in Haiti, but some people tell me you'll be in Haiti, they'll kiss you all day and hug you. I know that Latin nations, like Cuba, like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, back then, behemoths used to, behemoths always have a problem is showing affection. They do it on Christmas time. Yeah, my mate, say boo. Merry Christmas. Give you a hug and thing like that and kiss.
Yeah, we're very sort of restrained socially.
Yeah, definitely restrained from that. And I was wondering which part of the African era is we have that restraint.
Mm.
Because in this park, if he call you, he'll tell you. Back then, in the antenna, you know antenna is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you see that. And when you travel to the state, you see that. I think you still see it in some states.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the crime, because of this molestation, mix up affection, mix up true love. it got mixed up.
Yes.
It got in some bad cake, because I love cakes.
Yes.
But sometimes someone makes a bad cake, and I guess because of the immoral of things, too. Because that the marriage relationship was high. Your Grammy and my Grammy and everybody had, in those times, the marriage relationship was high.
Well, I think about it like this, and then I let you go, Papa. People maintain marriages not for themselves, but for the sake of the children.
Yes.
And perhaps what has shifted is that people don't see an obligation or duty of care to the children in that sense.
You're right. With that, right? I did a study of that. That's why the abuse of kids mentally and physically is so high, because a lot of the men, and not men, and they, you know, it's hard thing to say, a lot of women are not women. It's hard thing to say. The drug culture destroy that too.
Yes. Thank you very much, Pumpkin Eater. Have a great day. Let's go to the next caller. Good morning, caller.
Well, good morning, Aaron.
Morning.
And C.A. Nuri. Happy New Year. I haven't called you. A lot of people ask me why I don't call radio anymore. I tell them I'm too young, but whatever. You know, there's a difference between hug and touch.
Yes.
There you go. Simple. And so you're correct. A hug for over 30 seconds is, it releases chemicals in the body. I wouldn't go into all the specifics.
Yes.
So I felt I had to call this morning after a Bahamian who was so distressed and couldn't see the future. You know, should somebody have told that lady that she had incredible wealth coming to her just because she was a citizen of the richest country in the hemisphere, according to the World Bank and the IMF in 1983. I dare say she would have had...
Graham, let's say it like this, right? Let's say it like this, that economic uncertainty is a major stressor for people. And despite all of the Christian messages, thank you very much, Graham. In spite of all of the Christian messages that we fill the public airwaves with, we don't seem to see our current society as sitting in contradiction to that Christian message. We live in a place now where you could go to jail for not having some place to live. You could go to jail for not having some place to use the bathroom. Right? You could go to jail because you don't have a job and you can't make enough money to take care of yourself. That's the antithesis of the Christian message, as far as I'm concerned. But certainly we must recognize that economic and financial uncertainty is a major stressor and a major contribution to suicidal ideation. I got another text here. We are not really prepared to look at the real cause in the increase of crime in this country. We have feminized the requirements to receive opportunity, degrees, certifications, etc. Our reputation enhances required for opportunity. Okay. Texter, what do you mean by we have feminized the requirements to receive opportunity? Are you saying that in the Bahamas we operate purely on respectability politics and your access to employment depends on how you look and whether you fit the standard is set by respectability politics? See, because I've heard men say, I don't want to work in a bank. I don't want to wear a suit all day. I don't work in a bank. Da, 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 da. Is a young man not wanting to wear a suit a barrier to employment? Is it a self-made barrier? Is it a barrier that exists? But Texter, please, I would love for you to explain that text for me. Ah, dear Texter, thank you. So, Mr. Nuri, the first question I put on the table was, outside of Crackdown 2024, does the PM or the Ministry of National Security or the RBPF have a plan to respond to crime generally? And then to the wider public, do you have a plan to respond to respond to crime or to eradicate crime in the short term and the long term. In today's Guardian, the headline is Monroe Hopeful Crime Spurt Soon Behind Us. The headline in and of itself does not make me hopeful. It reads, Minister of National Security Wayne Monroe yesterday expressed confidence that the Royal Bahamas Police Force will soon be able to get a grip on the crime wave impacting New Providence and pointed out that there have been similar periods in the past where such, quote, spurts, close quotes, have happened. What people overlook is every year you have spurts, you know, and if you sit with police, they show you how one thing is interrelated to the other, and it's like a fire that burns intensely, and then you have lulls. And so last year, I believe March, April was the period, and it happens that it's the beginning of the year. And it may be, we continue to page 8, it may be police adapt, then that quells it, said Monroe, after police reported a series of shootings on the weekend. Mr. Newry. The first sentence says that the minister expressed confidence, which to me is a contradiction to the headline that says Monroe hopeful crime spurt soon behind us. Which leads me to the question, if we are experiencing a quote-unquote crime crisis, is the crisis the escalation of crime? Or is the crisis on the administrative side that it appears as if there are no solutions or strategies to be employed by the various actors involved to respond to or eradicate crime?
I pause only because I'm thinking of two different stories. I'm thinking of a story circa 1992, 1997 by a former prime minister. The former prime minister said, don't worry, Bohemians. And I'm paraphrasing here, just my words. But if people listen to me, you say yes, basically the former prime minister said that. Said, don't worry, Bohemians. The crime or the killing or the murders that is happening is that these are gang members killing out themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That eventually, it will, what the headline says? The spurt soon come
behind will soon behind be behind us, yeah.
That eventually the spurt, this murder spurt, soon will come to an end. That's the solution. I'm thinking about that. Perhaps that prime minister was right, that this is a conflict between certain groups, and eventually the spark, the fuel, will die out. The oxygen will be bred out.
Here's why the headline concerns me, because as far as I've read so far, I haven't seen any actual strategy being laid out, right? Like, tell me why you are hopeful in the headline and confident in the story itself that this quote-unquote spurt will be behind us. How do you know that it's a spurt, right? You can't rely on, well, these things have happened, it happens periodically. And if, as the prime minister says, they are aware of the root of the escalation, that it is gang and gun related, why isn't the state using the technological resources that it has available to them to provide a more effective response? And here's what I mean. We have electronic monitoring devices. The prime minister said in an article, and I have the article here, I will pull it out. The prime minister said that, now here's the sentence. Davis also said that in 2023, over 40% of murder victims were on bail for murder-related charges. So if you have electronic monitoring devices
mm-hmm.
in operation, and you said you had a drone program, right, although we've heard barely a word about the status of the drone program, why are you not using these tools as a part of a strategy that aims to protect people who are wearing electronic monitoring devices? If you say that in 2023, over 40% of murder victims were on bail for murder-related charges, right? Is the crisis in the killing, or is it in the lack of administrative responses to the escalation in violence.
Remember I said I had two stories I was thinking about?
Right.
The second story is a 2017 story.
Mm-hmm.
When the Tribune reported that we had record numbers for the new year. It said by February 16th, we had 27 murders that happened, or killings that happened to the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
It's not February 16th yet in 2024. I think we're up to 21?
Or 20 reports differ. The Guardian says 22. And other media reports say 23.
So if this trends continue, this spurt continues, it'll be higher from that 2017 record, which was by February 16th, we had 26, 27 murders or killings. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The newspaper indicated that was a gang war happening, mm-hmm. right? And the newspaper mentioned that the military was now on the ground. So I assume he meant the defense force
right.
back then, right? And I want to know, what was the government's response then? It seems to be the military on the ground, and I'm not sure what the military could do in regarding policing when policing is done by the police force, right? And I want to know what quelled the numbers. Did it come to a head where the minister said that, don't worry, it will fizz out due to it comes to its peak and then fizzle out? Or did they have a plan? You mentioned, what is the plan?
Mm-hmm.
Or did we enact a plan, a particular plan that we can employ again to solve this spurt that we're going through?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And all of the commentary leads me to believe that the crisis is in the administrative side and the inability to respond to crime effectively.
So who are you not blaming, but who are you suggesting is having this administrative crisis?
I think
is this the police force or is this government?
I think it sits with the PM, the Ministry of National Security, and the upper echelon of leadership, right? The leadership at the of the police force.
If you beg, can you bear with me, and I will challenge that. I would say the Prime Minister manages the entire economy, so why blame him? Now let's go to the Minister of National Security. He has employed the finances of the public purse and give the police force all of its partnerships that it can do. Say, whatever you need, we're willing to give you. Why blame the Minister of National Security, and why blame the Prime Minister when they're doing all what they can be done?
I don't think that they're doing all that can be done.
What else can they do?
Well, let's speak to a series of articles from last year leading into this year,
mm-hmm.
when concerns were raised by, I think, crime consultant Carlos Reed on the function of the company that provides the electronic monitoring device services. The first response from the Minister of National Security seemed flippant and trivial. Either he was not aware of the details, or he did not seem to think it was important enough to respond concisely and accurately, right? I think his response, if I could paraphrase, was, well, if there's a problem, you know, Metro has a problem, the police don't think it's a problem, right? And if there's a problem, then we're going to deal with it. But when we fast forward to Friday, I think I have the article here. When we fast forward to Friday, we see a totally different tone. In the article, ankle bracelet firm told to get it together. And this is in Friday's paper. The firm monitoring individuals out on bail through its ankle bracelet program has been told to get its act together, failing which consequences would flow. Minister of National Security said yesterday. That warning came amid reports that some people on bail have taken off their bracelets and moved about freely, even traveling. It is alleged that many have committed crimes while on bail. So that's Friday. The prior article, when we go to a break, I'll search it in my archives. If the Minister of National Security had responded earlier,
mm-hmm.
would some lives have been saved? Because social media is filled with anecdotal reports and sip-sip and hearsay about people removing ankle bracelets, about how easy it is to remove ankle bracelets. If the minister, and so the question on the table is, if the powers that be had moved with greater speed or urgency, would some of these lives not have been lost? Does the Ministry of National Security, does the Prime Minister, does the RBPF, does the Attorney General, does the judiciary have a duty of care to people within that system?
But they're doing the work in there, Aaron.
What does working have to do with ensuring that you fulfill in your duty of care? When somebody is on bail, they're part of the court system. The state has a duty of care to ensure that they're safe.
You're trying to say the system, the humans, have a duty of care to these people wearing ankle bracelets?
Yes.
Let them buggers stand.
Because
let them buggers stand.
No, Mr. Nuri.
No.
First of all,
you don't celebrate.
It's reckless to say that.
No.
As people in the media, it's reckless for us to say that. It's even more reckless for state actors to suggest that if you participate in crime, then death should be what you expected.
God, Richardson, is death? I expect him to die, Aaron.
But no, because here's the thing. If there's a reasonable belief that this person being released on bail will result in their death.
You're supposed to give him for bail quick.
No, then you can't give him bail.
So you're different from me, man, Aaron.
Which is fine. The question is, am I different from the jurisprudence? Am I different from the law? Right? And so we can't allow this to happen. There's a duty of care owed by the state to people who have been, we say prescribed, who have been allowed or, right, given bail, and the conditions of the bail is to wear the electronic monitoring device.
I say put on the device on them so we can know where they are. And let God do what God needs to do.
No, man, Mr. Nuri, that's completely and totally reckless. We can't be talking like that. And surely the state cannot talk like that, right? The Ministry of National Security got a quagmire now. Because for months and months, you've been flippantly saying these things without acknowledging your duty of care to these very same people. And so, trying not to be reckless, what we should see is we need to see an investigation on the operation of the electronic monitoring device company.
We could always encourage them, like with the Minister of National Security, say, might do a better job.
We're not running a lunchtime playgroup. We run in a country, and that's just not acceptable anymore. And we can't let our fear of crime and even our experience of crime drive us to the point where we advocate for the government to take away our freedoms and liberties guaranteed by the Constitution. It's like a manufactured consent. When you allow crime to escalate so that eventually people will beg you to breach their rights, they will beg you to restrict their rights. In this instance, in the absence of any real crime plan or strategy, nothing substantive has been put on the table. And if you're not going to do it, call, I come in right now. If you're not going to do it for me, the Bahamian citizen, are you going to do it in the interest of protecting the tourism product? Are you going to put a real substantive crime plan on the table for the interest of protecting the tourism product? Publish it in the media to build confidence. Caller, I'm sorry. Please call back. Let's get to the text line, Mr. Nuri. I see a call coming in. Let's take that call. Ah, caller, can you hold? My producer's... We can take it. Good morning, caller.
30 seconds, it's yours.
Hey, good morning, Ms. Green.
Morning, Papa. How you do?
Thank God for life, special. And good morning to Mr. Nuri and everyone else who listening. Papa, Ms. Green.
Yes, sir.
I can't remember your cell number. If I remember, I'd be calling you plenty times, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to ask you what I can go ask you, because it ain't appropriate and decent to do it live. I should say, please forgive Sparky and ask the Boston to forgive Sparky. he's dissed me too, right? I talk what I diss with Brave and all that. Like, they ain't nothing. They ain't like me. But I guess a lot of people around the world love to hear him on The Guardian and talking with you, although I hope I don't do it as much, but I got to involve myself because I ain't so Mr. Saint.
Papa, send me a message.
I always be rude sometimes. Yeah. It does be rude. What I call to say?
Yeah.
You don't have to answer that. I didn't want you to answer. I just say, I want to put that in your ears, and if I didn't remember yourself, I would have been calling
somebody. Yeah, you do done it privately.
Merry Christmas and happy birthday.
Yes, sir.
And how much I appreciate you when I listen in around 2, 3 o'clock in the morning to you and Mr. Nuri.
Yes, sir.
Just could enjoy it better. You know, you're sitting down doing whatever. This thing, what you're talking about, the bracelet, I don't know if I normally ask wherever I go, but I think I just ask you all because I think some of them big shots, the decision makers, who's been making decisions, they listen to you guys, and they play like they don't listen, and they do some of the things we do, and sometimes they ignore us. But I think I asked last week or week before, if you all could bring the people on who's deal with the drones, and bring the people on who's deal with the ankle bracelet, monitor bracelet. Why I say that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's because, excuse me, when I listen to them, they sound like they saying that when a shot go off, the drone is go up in the air and go away. It's live, real time. And you can see things, but, I mean, I don't expect them to tell us all the information, but my goodness, on you and here on the news, man, you see the car, the drone fall in the car. We can see the poison. We see them where they throw the gun. Something, man, this ain't making no sense. Thanks, mm-hmm. man. I can finish listening.
Absolutely. Thank you, Papa. Nuri?
I just want to mention to Papa, I appreciate the appeal, but Sparky's practice violence, and we can't tolerate violence on Guardian Radio.
Thank you, Mr. Nuri. Papa, on the other side of the break, I mean, touch on that point you made, right? What is the balance between national security concerns, right? What needs to remain confidential and what needs to be put in the public domain and why things need to be put in the public domain? On the other side of the break, thank you for that awesome contribution. Papa, producer, I'm ready to go to that break. You guys stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Girl, you see how Cora eye look funny, all black up yesterday?
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
What you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now, you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman, does mind her business, take care of them churn and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence, and we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I line up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call or text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328 tips or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll free at 300 tips or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them and the messages get on mix up before it leave your phone. So nobody can know what you're saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green. Mr. Nuri, take it from here. I'm going to look at these texts.
I just wanted to mention to Papa that I've reached out to Lehman Delavaux and Marlon Fulford from the Royal Bahamas Police Force and asked them if they could come on the show. Erin and I have some shows planned in terms of how we can partner with the Royal Bahamas Police Force, and we wrote permission to have someone come in, particularly regarding the complaints unit, the corruption unit. We wanted to have an interview with them regarding that. And also, I have no problem interviewing the drones, the police plan.
Well, let's find out the status of the drone program.
Program.
Right?
And just talk about that, just drones. So, and what can we do for that? And perhaps even police partnering. Would in the urban renewal community can we, as the public, can partner with. So, mm-hmm. I mean, and if they're hearing the show, I did send an email. I'm just waiting for the response.
Right, and have any laws been passed in terms of the governance and regulation of a drone operation, and then specific to police drones, right? Mm-hmm. Are they, do they have identifying markers? Like, how do I tell the difference between my competitor who trying to see what I growing on my farm, mm-hmm. and the police
no,
trying to see what's happening on my farm?
I just want to know if we're still doing it.
Okay.
Yes or no? If we're still doing it, no? Then move on. Let's go to something else. You know, I mean, I'm cool. I accept whatever the plan the police has. I just want to know what the plan
is. Just want to know what it is, yes. So we could understand it. Here's another text. Good morning, Aaron C.A. Unfortunately, we live in a society that's not compassionate at all. People can't talk to each other because what I'm going through is tea for you, and people don't listen without judgment. And it appears as if I can just throw my 3 cents in there. The political class is very good at sort of evoking sympathy for politicians.
Yes.
But very little sympathy for the poor man.
Especially the political class who show up at renowned gangsters' debt and say, hey, he's a party supporter. And I have a friend of the family, so I'm here at the debt scene. I still don't appreciate it. I still, especially in this spat of violence, I don't appreciate it at all. I just letting them know I can bring it up again and again and again. Get them in line. Stop showing up.
I get a text that it says, you really thought our leaders know what strategy is beyond a political one? If you do, I have 2 bridges for sale.
I believe our political leaders are supposed to bring up a political strategy. The police force is supposed to implement a police strategy. And then the community implement a community strategy. That now we need to find out how all this coincides and how we can partner with the police force, how we can partner with the politicians and the general civic groups. I want to know what the church responds. What are they doing? We have all kinds of civic organizations. Mm-hmm. What's the Kiwanis doing? What's the Rotary doing in terms of crime? When will the prime minister call and say, hey, civic organizations, we in a stressful position right now. What initiatives can you do? Or I charge you now to say, you need to come up with a strategy to just deal with this crime we're going through.
Which organization can go to the ADO, Agricultural Development Organization, and seek out a grant for farmland to grow food just to distribute to the needy?
And can one of these bail sentences be that these people are put on an island to do work, part of their sentences. I guess you got to be found guilty. You can't force people to do labor. But if you're putting you on bail,
because technically you're on remand.
But can you be on remand in your house? You can't go to the food store? Or you got to stay in prison?
There's another question, right? In the amending of the Bail Act, will provisions be included to restrict movement of people wearing electronic monitoring devices? So you are expected to go to work, to church, and you make 1 stop a week at the food store.
What they did during COVID, I couldn't come outside. I got to stay in my yard. You restricted to your yard.
So in the instance of somebody who's on bail, because remember, while you're on bail, you're presumed innocent.
Sell fruits.
And they have a family to take care of.
Sell a breakfast from your house. You shouldn't have committed no crime. That's why you have the ankle
bracelet. We don't
bracelet.
Know that you committed the crime. That's not why you have the ankle bracelet on.
The ankle bracelet on you for a reason.
Let's go to the caller.
Just stay in your house.
Listen, let's go to the caller. And then we're going to interrogate that.
Someone doing this drive-by and it'll be the ankle bracelet.
Please
people.
Remember that we could interrogate it on the other side. Good morning, caller.
1 minute for me,
caller. Now, we need to try something new that hasn't been done here. We need police choppers. Choppers does the trick. You cannot outrun them. Drones slow. We need 1 or 2 police choppers that can see you in the dark or in the day. That will put a fear that you cannot escape. We can't stop the crime, but we could make the boys fear that you cannot get away. And then we need to change the law like Senator Joe Biden did in 1994. Violent crime will be go 20, 40, 60 years in prison. And I've seen the work. I've seen them crush the Zoe Pound. They crush John Doe. John Doe was making so much money, the local police was being paid. And then the feds come in, I work with them and sell the guns to them, buy drugs from them and set them up. And then when they bust down each door, you're facing 40, 60 years unless you work with us. And flip, you get 20. So we need to change the law. We ain't been trying something new. We need police choppers, like getting on the bail lock, right? You see FTX star Mike Manfred, he violated bail. The judge sentenced him to jail. You see Joe Lewis, the rich man who owned the rich place over here. Now, he on federal bail. The judge tell him, you cannot use your yacht. You cannot use your plane only to come here. You cannot get on your jet. You must stay in one. He only had 3 houses. One in New York, Georgia, and Florida. You must stay in your house. That's the, every bail come with a conditions.
Yes,
if you violate, you will be in jail. Why are we giving murderers four and five bails? And these are white criminal callers. FTX is a white collar criminal, but he violated his bail. The judge sent him back to jail until his trial started. Right?
Yep. Thank you. Thank you very much. Here's a question I have. If somebody, is the argument that people need to be able to work to pay their legal fees, right? Has the argument been that by not allowing bail, then a person cannot generate the funds needed to launch the best legal defense possible? If that's the case, why do we have a legal culture where criminal lawyers demand exorbitant amounts of money for their service? Because if you're defending criminals, then you also already assume that their access to cash is limited, right? And if it isn't limited, you must ask yourself, where are these proceeds originating from?
All of the best criminal lawyers I know are KCs and are millionaires. Who paying them?
I'm so glad I forget what I was going to interrogate you about before.
That's
that last
good.
I'm caller.
Glad you forget. I just want to make sure that everyone know that point. All the best criminal lawyers we have are KCs and are millionaires. Where they get their wealth from?
What is this expectation that somebody is before the court on a serious criminal offense can access that type of cash to pay for the service? Here's another text. This is a response to my question asking the texter, what does "we have feminized the requirements to receive opportunity" means? So here's the texter's response. When women form groups, reputation trumps competence. When men form groups, competence trumps reputation. Are you sure about that, sir? Texter, sorry. Don't let me just presume that you're a man because you said that. Are you sure about that, texter? He said, when women form groups, reputation trumps competence. When men form groups, competence trumps reputation. By using proxies for competence, such as degrees, certifications, etc., to give people opportunity, this will be natural for women but unnatural for men.
What?
They said by using proxies for competence, such as degrees, certifications, so they're saying that a degree is a symbol of competence, but it doesn't mean that you're actually competent, right? Etc., to give people opportunity. This will be natural for women, but unnatural for men. Okay, it goes on. To be clear, not all women and not all men. Okay, so the text says, look, I'm not painting with a broad brush. I must say it's not all women and it's not all men. They go on. Our society rewards feminine traits whenever there isn't a direct link between effort and reward. By relying on these proxies of competence, we have separated direct effort from reward. What do we really expect from the police leadership when people are rewarded for obedience and punished for innovation? Our problem is the reward and punishment system. Listen, I don't understand this texter. You think in this place people are rewarded for obedience and punished for innovation?
Mm-hmm.
Is that why Sebastian Bastian is now an ambassador? Is that why Adrian Fox is now running around a place calling himself Dr. Fox in videos with our prime minister?
He is a doctor. He, Carlos Reed, and
those are honorary designations, and they're only to be used in the institution that proffered them.
You're saying Carlos Reed is not a doctor?
I'm saying that it's ridiculous to think that we reward people for obedience and punish them for innovation. half of y'all think that turning right on red is an innovation.
Okay.
You're being rewarded for it. Our problem is the reward and punishment system. I agree with you, sir. Texter, lady, sir, I don't know who you are. But I don't think that we are awarding people in this town for obedience, nor are we awarding them for excellence and innovation. I just don't think it goes along these gendered lines that you are suggesting. Another text, according to Mr. Monroe, the gang leaders, who nobody knows, are in charge of when the murder and gunshot spurt ceases.
What
gang? I don't even think that's according to Mr. Monroe. That's not what he's saying. That means that essentially the gangs are in charge of national security. They have the say of what happens on our streets. We may as well pay them to keep peace on our streets than Mr. Monroe. So two things. I don't think Mr. Monroe said the gang leaders are in charge. He never said anything like that.
I think he's being cynical. I understand.
Yeah, right. I got you.
It was a tongue-in-cheek remark.
We may as well pay them to keep peace on our streets. When we get Scrooge back on the show, we need to ask him, to what extent did gangs, formal organized gangs of the past, also operate as peacekeepers on their own turf?
Mm.
Right? That'd be very interesting.
But David King keeps peacekeepers in their own turf after they met with the former prime minister.
Yeah, but I mean, we just assume that everything that he's doing is ragga, ragga, ragga. But what if these gangs were actually instilling some form of discipline within community spaces?
Mm.
Good morning, caller.
Aaron.
Yes, sir.
I had to call back, yeah, Mr. Neary, just to say, I'm smart as Mr. Neary, and I definitely know I'm smart as you, Miss Green. But Miss Green, I kind of understand the text. I kind of don't know to say understand or to say I agree, and maybe don't really understand. But that's a deep voice. That voice in this thing, deep. That voice in speak. I wish they'd break that down and just say it simple. So you, what it sound like it's saying to me?
Yes.
You know, like how the whistleblowing thing, what we need in the country, they say we have it, but they really don't do it. You know, like how the director of immigration did speak out the other day against the minister and how, she needed to leave and she
but listen,
forth.
Let's just take a pin for a second. I don't even think she spoke out.
Okay,
somebody leaked a letter to her superior. Like she was following the chain of command and somebody leaked it.
That could be so.
Yeah,
you know that thing where they call thing and promotion where they give everybody
social promotion,
even if you don't deserve it?
Yeah.
It even sound a little part of that. It's like, if you smart, like are you smart?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of children could hear you smart. And I especially the set who really know you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it, like in that word innovation.
Yeah.
Like they knock these people down.
Yeah.
You don't get rewarded for that. You don't get pushed to make the country, make the society better. When you're obedient to when you're obedient to any prime ministers or leaders, Yes, sir, ma'am.
I got you.
That's what that text sounded like. That deep, man, look at text. Please continue to text into the show. But simply dance so Ms. Green can understand.
Thank you.
Ms. Green is very smart. For some reason, I've gone over her head.
It didn't go over my head, Papa.
Yes, ma'am.
I got to be here to let them say it. I got
to
be here to let them say
it.
Thank you, Papa, very much. I just got one last text to address. Y'all keep asking me about Sparky. I think in the best interest of Sparky, I won't talk about it publicly. For his sake. Thank you, though.
Call the police.
There you go. You guys have a great day. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Neary is up next. It's going to be an exciting show. Y'all have a wonderful day.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.